It's only as we become more stable that we can really open to what's going on below the surface. It's kind of like the surface of life is like the waves on the ocean, and we're bobbing around, blah, 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 with all the different little impacts. But we've omitted to sink down into the depth of, the big, vast stillness of who we also really are. And so that calming is an essential piece. So that's this afternoon, a steadying, settling, slowing down, calming. Tomorrow morning, we're going to deal with how to hold difficulty, pain, anxiety, struggle, the things which, for a lot of us, is why we want to meditate in the first place. What motivates us is how to deal with the challenges and the things that are, hard for us and the pains in our lives and so on and so forth. So that's about how to develop this capacity, which we have that's infinite. But we want to be able to tap into this infinite capacity to be with and hold difficulty, fear, anxiety. It's called compassion, feel with. So that's tomorrow morning. And then tomorrow afternoon is, it's what happens as we do this work. We first reassure ourselves and we calm down. Then we allow ourselves to be with difficulty. And what happens, and this is natural progression, joy. Joy, lightness, openness, connectedness, the real, what friendliness is all about, really. But we have to get there by using the supports to help us get there. You can't just wish it, or else we would all be super friendly all the time. So that's how the weekend will lay out. And what will happen is at the beginning of each session, now more because it's the beginning one, to set it all up, I will give a talk and take a few questions. And then we will practice for the rest of that particular session, walking and sitting, which is why I haven't made a schedule, because it depends on how long I talk and how many questions there are, and then we'll practice after that. And also depends on how much rain. If it's rain, we won't walk so long outside. If there's not so much rain, we can walk a little further and a little longer. And so that's why I want it to be flexible. Any questions about that? Does that sound what you came here for? Sounds reasonable. Okay. That's good. So, first of all, then, I like to do this, even on a weekend retreat. You're going to be silent momentarily, but for 2 minutes, not long at all, without moving anywhere, just turn, well, you can move slightly, turn around and just introduce yourself to the people sitting around you. Because one of the weird things, especially those who are new to doing this, sitting in silence beside someone else, being friendly and not having a clue about even their name is weird. And so, well, just befriend yourself with the people immediately around you, because you'll be probably at least all day sitting in that same spot. So go ahead. So friendly, you could talk all day. Okay. As far as meeting people on an individual basis or in small groups, I'm also going to be flexible with this today. If anybody wants to talk to me or ask me a question about some particular thing in your life, just come up to me. I'm not going to go away. I'm just going to be here and on some of the time walk outside. But and we can have conversations inside this little room. And those people who really want, I don't mean, that's even the wrong word right away, who want to have some question and answer time with me in a smaller group than in the large group, because that's always the case for certain people, then during walking periods, I'll go in there. So either I'll have an individual conversation, or if there are several of you wanting to come and speak at once, that's fine too. And I'll have to work out how much to be individually available and how much to be in a small group. But I don't want, you know, everyone to move all in there and then get into chit chat. I want you to be practicing yourself today, this, you know, the weekend. But I also want to make myself available because there are often particular things people want to know about. And so I'll see how I can work that out with you. I'll do my best to make that. And if you have some question and it can wait, you know, do it this afternoon because, you know, we have the whole weekend. You can have some time. But I'm not going to. Usually what I've done here is kind of say, okay, you guys are going to come at this next walking period and you all come and you all sit in a circle and ask questions or speak. But I'm not going to be as rigid about that. I'm going to let you self-select because you don't all need to sit in there and listen to other people talk if you don't want to. And some of you want to. So that's how I'm going to do that. So, friendliness and why it's so important and what it is that we want in friendliness, really, deeply, in the ocean of ourselves, we're friendly. We're social creatures. I mean, some of us are more sociable than others, but some are more extroverted and some less. Nevertheless, we deeply are relational beings. And when we are in a harmonious relational scenario, we're happy. And what happens in our minds is a lot of the time we isolate into self-concern, my troubles, my fears, my worries, and we feel alienated. And when we're alienated, we do harm. We then don't respect or don't understand or misperceive and react and worse. You know, we actually hurt each other, sometimes deliberately, sometimes, you know, inadvertently, and sometimes we actually, you know, really become enraged and even worse. You know, the cruelties and violence that happens in the world is all when there's alienation. When we're with our own kindred spirits, whoever they are, whether they're by blood or by choice, we don't do harm. You know, those are the people we protect, those are the ones we respect, the ones we care about, we want to learn from. And so our good qualities come out when we're cooperating, when we're feeling belonging. When we're feeling disconnected, then we get into trouble, and it's painful, and we are depressed and anxious and so on. And so all spiritual practices, whatever they are, I'm sure, are guiding us towards, orienting us towards how to be together harmoniously. And this one too. What's described in the Buddhist teachings is that there are two wings of this practice. One of them is wisdom, meaning understanding, the mind that sees clearly and realizes things, and the other is the heart that cares, is loving kindness or friendliness. And they are each other's wing, you know, without one wing you can't fly at all. So they're both here. And what happens too is naturally as we understand something, we care about it. It's just a natural thing. It's when we don't understand, we don't recognize what's happening, we don't care. Because we can't, because we don't understand it. As you understand a situation, a person, a being more, you care more about that being. So friendliness is the expression of understanding. So as we practice, if we do a lot of meditation with our eyes closed and in isolation, and things begin to make sense inside our minds, we discover that we're more friendly. It's a fruit of understanding. And so a lot of people's love and kindness and friendliness metta emerges just as a natural thing because of sitting quietly and contemplating your own mind and heart and what's going on, because you understand more. We can develop friendliness by developing wisdom, or we can develop friendliness by developing friendliness, and then wisdom comes. So it's not, it's, you know, whichever, they're all as good as each other, goes together. I've got some lovely little words to say here, cute little things here. Third Zen patriarch, the burdensome practice of judging brings arrogance and weariness. Srinivasa Maharaj was an Advaita teacher from India in the last century, and he said several things about the mind and the heart. The mind makes the abyss. It thinks separation. It brings up worry or judgment. The heart crosses it. I love that. Crosses the abyss. And Ajahn Suchito, one of the Thai forest monks who's just retired, actually, but an Englishman, some of you know these names. He talks about citta, which is the Pali word for the mind and heart, as though they're not separate, as having two capacities, if you like. One is the fingers, and one is the palm of a hand. The fingers are the part of the mind which collects information, the data processing, the figuring out, the explaining, the describing. And the palm is the part that holds. A hand doesn't function without both those parts. You need the fingers to manipulate, to gather, to rearrange, to collect. But you need a palm to hold it, for things to rest in, to be. I love that word, holding. And I've been reading a book recently, which I still haven't finished, which has been a most extraordinarily fascinating, brilliant book. And it's about the two hemispheres of the brain. It's called The Master and His Emissary. I don't know if any of you have read it or know of this book. But anyway, it's very dense. It's brilliant, but it's packed with information. I'm not recommending it necessarily, but it's fabulous. It's describing how our society has evolved over time, depending on which hemisphere has been leading the society at the time, and how the rise and fall of the different parts of our civilization, like the Renaissance and the rise and fall of the Roman era and so on, all the different things we've been through, it can be seen in terms of the functioning of the hemispheres. And I think of the fingers as the left hemisphere, data collecting, processing information, individuating, separating often, and the palm as the right hemisphere holding the kind of the whole thing. And it's really interesting for me to be reading this book and thinking about the studies of the brain, because it's also full of lots of the imaging and all of the neuroscience and the recording of the brain, which is now we have so much access to that in the modern era of all technology and so on, in terms of what we're doing as we meditate. And it seems to me what we're doing as we meditate, what we're training our brains to do, is to move to the right hemisphere. And we get very busy with the left and all of the processing and all the manipulation and all the, you know, trying to get and trying to get rid of and figuring out activity. And then as we train the brain to being more open and to holding and to allow, we're actually going from the busy little details to the what we share. We're going from the separate to the union, seems to me. So it's quite interesting for me to look at this whole science in terms of being a meditation teacher and practitioner. When you look at anything as separate from you, you cannot love it because you're afraid of it. When you know beyond all doubting that the same life flows through all that is, and that you are that life, you will love all naturally and spontaneously. And this is a simple little thing. I've got these little snippets of quotes and things, but I don't know where I got this. I think I got this from a book that I've loved for years called The Heart's Code, written by a doctor who transplanted hearts and was interested to discover that a certain number, 15%, of the people who received hearts don't just receive the organ, they receive the emotional life of the owner of that heart and the stories of their changed characters because of, you know, the impact of that. You know, a 54-year-old man is driving around with a 20-year-old man's heart, you know, loving loud rock music and being a bit of a cowboy, you know, kind of thing. All kinds of extraordinary things. I think that's from this book, in which it says there are 54, of course there must be more than this now, verified accounts of animals returning to owners over great distances to places never seen before. It's not that they've gone to their home where they were before, they've gone to their owners in some other place where they've never been, which isn't anything to do with, you know, a homing instinct or, you know, being a monarch butterfly. It's because of the relationship. And if that can actually draw animals over miles to some strange place, that's the the pull of the heart. It's an extraordinary thing when you think about it. This is written by Desmond Tutu, beautiful being, and it's in a book that he wrote, No Future Without Forgiveness, who's such a huge part of the reconciliation movement in South Africa, as you know. And it's a paragraph about this word, which doesn't have an English translation very well, called Ubuntu. And some of you know this. There's a photograph that was in the National Geographic with this article, which I read years ago. The photograph was of a circle made up of the soles of feet of people sitting in a circle facing inwards with their legs out straight and their feet straight up like this, and all their feet are touching, so there are all these many feet connecting, and Africans. It's an African word. Ubuntu is very difficult to render into a Western language. It speaks of the very essence of being human. You share what you have. It is to say, my humanity is caught up, inextricably bound up in yours. We belong in a bundle of life. We say, a person is a person through other persons. It's not, I think, therefore I am. It says rather, I am human because I belong. I participate, I share. A person with Ubuntu is open and available to others, affirming others, doesn't feel threatened that others are able and good, for he or she has a proper self-assurance that comes from knowing that he or she belongs in a greater whole, and is diminished when others are humiliated or diminished, and when others are tortured or oppressed, or treated as if they are less than who they are. So it's speaking to this deeper part of our nature, which friendliness is all part of. Beautiful word. Studies in hospitals. I'm sure you all know this. Studies in hospitals. Patients who are given a plant to tend, a flower to take care of, or, you know, a pet even, or birds, heal quicker. There's lots of studies about this. I saw something fairly recently on a screen about bringing birds, an aviary of birds, into an old people's home. You know, and there was just helplessness and hopelessness. People just stuck there to die and just like with, you know, no hope at all. We're now out and about visiting with each other because there's in the hallway there's this aviary of birds chirping and things like this. Anyway, the life brings life. Connection brings connection. And this is our natural expression of ourselves. And why do we, I don't actually, I haven't done this before, but I'm sure a lot of us do. We put up quite a bit of money out to get symphony tickets or join choirs, which I do, or we go to concerts. It isn't just for the music. It's for the whole experience of being together, with sharing all of that whole experience with other people. Go to the opera, go to dances. When I was a kid growing up in England, what we did, like for a special event, when somebody was having a special celebration, is we had a dance. You know, you actually hired musicians and people came and you didn't just have a party and gathered, you actually danced. Because of that, that's what music does. And we all know this. I mean, it's very ancient, very, very ancient in the human to dance and have music, singing and dancing, and because of the connecting of it. That's where we feel beyond ourselves. We feel we belong. We build those bonds, and that's freedom from self-concern and anxiety and then alienation and all the harm that happens. So I don't want to sound lectury. A couple of other little stories, though. Sweet story. San Francisco Chronicle front page. Oh, it could have been 10 years ago now. 2005, I got the date right here, December 2005. There was a female humpback whale who had, some of you heard of this story. Who knows this story? You've heard this story before, a couple of you. Lots of you haven't, good. There was a female humpback whale who had become entangled in a spider web of crab traps and lines. She was weighted down by hundreds of pounds of traps, caused her to struggle to stay afloat. She also had hundreds of yards of rope wrapped around her body and her tail and her torso, and one was tugging through her mouth. A fisherman spotted her just east of the Farallone Islands outside the Golden Gate Bridge, and radioed to an environmental group for help within a few hours, because it takes hours. The rescue team arrived and determined that she was in such a bad state that the only way to save her was to dive in and untangle her, a very, very dangerous proposition. One slap of her tail could kill a rescuer. They worked for hours with curved knives and eventually freed her. So we're talking many hours. You know, first of all, I don't know how many hours she was entangled, and then hours before they came, and then hours to actually do the work of freeing her. They freed her. And when she was free, the divers say, she swam in what seemed like joyous circles. Then she came back to each and every diver, one at a time, and nudged them, pushing them gently around. She thanked them. Some said it was the most incredibly beautiful experience of their lives. The guy who cut the rope out of her mouth says that her eye was following him the whole time, and he will never be the same. May we all be so blessed and fortunate to be surrounded by those who love us enough to help untangle us from that which is binding us, and remember to thank them. Isn't that a lovely little story? The effect on people, and all they did was give and care and help, and are completely transformed because of it.
Heather, are you taking a Q&A?
Not yet. Not yet. So this is a book on loving kindness by Sharon Salzberg. Now, she's one of the founders of Vipassana in the West, and she's the mother of the loving kindness movement in the West, I would say, in the tradition of the Vipassana Theravada in North America, and has written lots and teaches a lot in this way. And she just has these beautiful words. I want to share some of her words. She says it so well. The ways in which we direct our minds to cultivate this seeing are all important. She's talking about seeing our connection rather than seeing our separation, seeing what's different about each other, seeing what's the same about each other. This transformation of mind, releasing the burden of concepts, isn't just theoretical. I wonder if I've got the right page here. The legacy of separation impoverishes the spirit. That's a great sentence. The legacy of separation impoverishes the spirit. Seeking only to protect ourselves, we cannot genuinely connect with others. We cannot see what needs our love, and we struggle with terrible aloneness. In trying to reach others from the stance of our isolation, we're like weary travelers preparing for a dangerous border crossing, cautiously hoping to reach a new land and make contact, secretly believing it'll not be possible. Imagine the relief of discovering that there is no such border to be crossed. It's only through seeing our fundamental connection with the world that a life of true peace becomes possible. The ways in which we direct our minds to cultivate this seeing are all important. This transformation of mind, releasing the burden of concepts, is not just theoretical. There is a path to actualize it. Again and again in his teachings, the Buddha explores love and connectedness. Through meditation and through the practice of loving kindness, Brahmavihara practice, she calls it. The Brahmaviharas are these four ways of friendliness, metta being general friendliness, karuna being compassion, we'll talk about that tomorrow morning, mudita being shared joy, do that tomorrow afternoon, and upekkha meaning equanimity or great balance of mind, great perspective, which we'll also talk about all through the weekend. Brahmavihara, he offers us the possibility to radically change our relationship to life. When we learn to move beyond mistaken concepts and see clearly, we no longer solidify reality. We see waves coming and going, arising and passing. We see that life, composed of this mind and body, is in a state of continual, constant transformation and flux. There's always the possibility of radical change. Every moment, not just poetically or figuratively, but literally every moment, we're dying and being reborn. We and all of life. Without the rigidity of concepts, the world becomes transparent and illuminated, as though lit from within. With this understanding, the interconnectedness of all that lives becomes very clear. We see that nothing is stagnant and nothing is fully separate, that who we are, what we are, is intimately woven into the nature of life itself. Out of this sense of connection, love and compassion arise. So, today, this morning, I'm going to just continue on with instructing what we're going to actually focus on and how we're going to do that for this morning. Typically, it's some degree of anxiety or fear that keeps us separate. It's also things like doubt, and we just don't trust that it's okay, so we better be busy, which cause a lot of the busyness that keeps us separate from each other. So we want to feel safe, and we want to feel trust in ourselves, in our world, in our life, in our contacts. So very briefly, but this is a very foundational part of these retreats, just let's reflect that to be safe together, and here we are among relative strangers. You did greet each other, so you're not quite so strange to each other. Nevertheless, we don't really know each other. We need to reflect that we're all here because we all care about being friendly, obviously, so that right away we can be fairly comfortable. But we can make an agreement that we won't do anything to distress or disturb each other as best we can while we're here close in contact for the weekend, in spite of being quiet. Traditionally, these are called taking precepts. Lots of you are familiar. But even if you're not, it doesn't have to be formal. It's a reflection and then it's agreement that we make that we will do as best we can for the weekend, at least. These are great ways to live, of course, but certainly for the weekend, to offer us, create a sense of safety for each other, to open up in, just open up our hearts. We don't have to open up and tell everyone our deepest stories, but just to feel safe and therefore less tightly packed into our separation. We agree to do our best to respect forms of life, or to respect each other, but all forms of life. Most of them are hibernating out there, but nevertheless, a sense that we respect life and care rather than will harm and stomp on the worms that we may see coming out because of the rain or whatever. We'll just be careful with life. Second one is that we will be content with whatever it is we have, and we won't need to take anything that's not given to us. We won't be sneaking anyone else's lunch or cushions or attention or, we won't take from that's not been given to us. So we won't use each other or use each other's space. And then we feel less taken from. We don't have to be so guarded when that happens. It's an agreement. Thirdly, we agree also not to impose our sexual agenda on anybody. Our sexual energy is so big and so powerful and so deep in all of us that we actually don't interfere sexually, even energetically, with people while in retreat. So we don't impose, if we fancy somebody or, have an opinion about someone, we just keep that to ourselves. As best we can, not even concerning ourselves with someone else being interested to us sexually. In sort of long-term life, the agreement is not to break vows, not to, harm anybody with any sexual energy at all, not to impose anything or disturb anybody. So much harm is done, as we know, in the world with this huge energy. But just sitting together in a retreat, to just keep any of that to ourselves so that we don't, no one has to feel defensive in any way, in that sexual way. The fourth way is to not speak untruth or words which separate. You're silent. So most of the time you aren't going to be saying anything that's going to alienate somebody or gossip. Here you are speaking about a third party with judgment that immediately causes separation in the heart. But you're silent, so that won't happen overtly, but covertly, just tune into what your comments are inside yourself and be careful about that habit of judgment, which is wearisome and annoying for other people. Your inner sense of separating yourself from other people in your comments that go on inside your head, or against yourself, how we speak against our own selves inside ourselves. You know, easily we become in conflict by being our own critic, for instance. So speaking truthfully and kindly. And the fifth one is simply, and we don't have the opportunity really here, but is to, for the benefit of our meditation practice and to reassure each other, to stay clear-minded rather than intoxicated. So no whipping down the drive to have a quick toke at lunch or that kind of thing. Like, keep, you know, clear, not, you know, out with that brown paper bag drink. Because it's really hard for the mind to stay present. It's not complicated, but it's hard for our minds to become quiet, open, tender, clear when we're inebriated in some way. So it's that was a later agreement the Buddha required of his practitioners. So presumably later on he found a monk who was drinking mead or whatever they did in India in those days. That was in England, they did mead. I don't know what they did in India for intoxicants, but something, obviously. Anyway, those five agreements, do we agree? Can you all just nod and smile enough that I can say that everyone's nodding and smiling and agreeing? Thank you. So part of friendliness meditation is contemplative. It's thinking about wholesome, good, friendly things. I'm not giving these words because I want you to not think about them. I'm not wanting to stimulate a lot of mental activity, but at the same time, as we meditate, part of what we're doing, we're actually choosing where to direct our attention. It's a training. We're training the mind to think in certain ways and not other ways. So we don't need to, we're abandoning our usual habits of judging and shopping and worrying and blaming and fussing around whatever our issues are. Not to say that we don't have them and we have to be concerned with them, but we're choosing to direct the attention towards feelings of well-being, feelings of friendliness, feelings of gratitude, wholesome things. And this morning, what we're trying to do is reassure ourselves. So there are a few ways which I recommend you contemplate. Let your minds go towards with the effect of calming and reassuring you. And we have different ways that we do that, all of us. So it's inviting thoughts about, which then create feelings of well-being. Trusting the things which we trust, because when we're anxious, we aren't trusting. We want to be trusting. So what do we trust? One of the things that is top on my list, because it was my list, is nature. And it isn't just nature, but one of the things of nature that I trust are the rhythms of nature, the cycling of nature. There's no question, it's reliably happening. Little buds, I saw hazel catkins, long and already happening. That's a sign of early spring. They always do it in early spring. They reliably do it. On Salt Spring, I've seen the first few lambs. They do it in January. It's what happens. They do their mating in the summer and they carry their babies in the fall and winter, and then they have these spring lambs. That's a sign of spring. And that rhythm, the eagles return at this time of year. I know I'm a country person, so I'm very aware of these things, but the eagles go away in the fall for a while. They go further north and they come back down at this time of year, and they do it every year. And every time I see them back, I'm going like, yep, another year, everything's as it should be, all is well in the cosmos because of the rhythms of nature, for instance. And so you may have your own. You do have your own. But the things, you know, even just the cycling of the seasons, the cycling of the day and the night, the rhythms. The planet's one big rhythm. You have your heart that beats this rhythm. We notice and talk about arrhythmia, you know, if you have something wrong with your heart, but we don't talk about, for the whole life, however many millions of beats your heart beats, rhythmically, reliably. Just the breathing here, you know, just we're sitting here breathing, breathing, breathing. We can just hear, we don't even know we're doing it, but you're at the inside, you're aware of this rushing pulse going on and this breathing going on and the rhythm of that. It's so reassuring. People rock. people who are in great distress for whatever reason rock themselves. We rock babies. I mean, you know, I used to be a midwife and I would meet new fathers and they'd be standing rocking their bag of groceries. We'd be having a conversation. It's like, so just get into this moving thing because it's reassuring. So any of the rhythms of the world, the ocean, we love the ocean. We like sit there quietly watching that rhythm of the waves. Something different than watching a pond, which doesn't have that rhythm. Music, rhythmic. Reflect upon any of these things for yourself, which reassure you. In general, this is also really reassuring and beautiful to do. I highly recommend we do this, is count blessings. You know, we've all got so many blessings, and we have these hearts which go beating all our lives. Amazing. We have these minds which can be trained and can see clearly. We have this capacity to enjoy music together. We know we have friends. We have these friends in our lives. There are people who are dear to us. There are people who've inspired us in our lives, who write beautiful words like Desmond Tutu. Or what are the blessings of your life? You know, I've got great eyesight. I have to have reading glasses, I'm 66. But I've got these good eyes. I love these eyes. I love that I see so many things. That's a big blessing. You know, I have health on the whole, general good health. I know my mother was Cornish, so I'm still got the old witchy part of me in there. I have to touch wood when I say something risky like that. I have good health. But it isn't, you know, not to take for granted what we have. Bodies in general, unbelievable. So count some blessings. But the point isn't to just do that. The point is, as we meditate, to then feel how that softens us, calms us down, reassures us. When you're reassured, how different does that feel from when you're, whatever, what's the opposite of reassured? Upset. You know, there should be a non-reassured word, but anyway. When we feel, you know, that sense of like, oh, a little bit not okay, slightly on cat on the hot tin roof a bit feeling, and then we reassured, notice the change in how you experience. So oftentimes through the morning, for a little bit of time, for some minutes, count a few blessings. And feel yourself being reassured and calming down, and your shoulders go down, and maybe your pulse will slow, who knows. But the feeling that, you know, you can soften, you don't have to hold your musculature in such a guarded way, you can relax the tension of the forehead, and so on. Notice in yourself how you can yourself soothe yourself, and that you are doing, and what that feels like. And then we want to make this a meditation, so you're going to walk soon and do this. I'm not going to be giving instructions then through the morning. You're on your own to do this. Count some blessings. Refer to the cycles of nature. Look at the beauty around for you, if that's beautiful, that reassures you. Be reflective. appreciate yourself is another really important one. That you, even though we so readily criticize ourselves, we also are really civilized. We all drive on the same side of the road, for instance. You know, we generally do our banking in banking hours. Now we don't have to, we can do it online. But you know what I'm saying? We flow along around each other and with each other and cooperate with each other. We wait for somebody else at an intersection. I mean, not just because the light's red, but we'll get a ticket if we didn't, but because we do. You know, we're harmonious and we hold doors for people who need it and we pay taxes. We're great. There's a lot of... we're kind. We're tolerant. We're not always tolerant. We lose it sometimes, but those are remarkable. In between all of that, we're kind. You know, we cope. We're conscientious. We're responsible people. We're law-abiding citizens cooperating together in a big urban, most of you, environment. It's extraordinary how harmonious it is. What hits the news is when that breaks down, not all the rest of the time when it's working. be reassured. We don't have to go to the most fantastic parts of our lives to be reassured. Be reassured by just the decent quality, the human qualities that we're all exhibiting, that we all have. Focus on the good, not focus on where it breaks down in the times that we don't function so well. Focus on what works well. So much of it. And then to make it a meditation through the day. So you contemplate, focus your attention on the wholesome, reassure yourself, uplift yourself, be grateful, count blessings, and so on. Tune into how you're then feeling. And then take some part of whatever that is, a small piece of something, and repeat that awareness, sustain awareness of that one piece. Because this is I'm giving you a big field to explore. And then take one piece of this field that you explore that's reassuring to you and stay with that. And just keep, as it were, feasting or tasting that so that you can draw out that moment. Because we're good at multitasking, lots of little jump onto something else and something else, but slow that process down and drag it out, as it were, extend it. And one way to do that is to put a couple of words around it. It's not the only way, but it works for a lot of us because we do have this busy left hemispheres going on. And so see what, two, three words you could put on some part of your experience and repeat it for a while, for some minutes. So it keeps serving you in that same way. For instance, you could say something like, I'm really okay. I am really okay. Thank you would be a simple thing. Or this, spring is coming. Spring is coming. Spring is coming. I trust nature. We're all doing the best we can. We're all doing the best we can. We're all the same here. May we be kind to each other. May we be kind to each other. Something. Something. A phrase, a couple of words, and repeat them. Slowly, gently. And then after some time, another one. Something, other thing. Then use your contemplative mind. Draw something in which nourishes you that's different. Because it won't work if you try and stay with one thing for too long. You'll get bored, you'll drift off, and then you won't be meditating. You'll be shopping or planning or worrying. And so to come back again, to refocus again, some other piece, and then sustain that for some minutes. How does this sound as a way of instruction? Doable? Okay. So I'd like us to do this now, continue on like this for the next 20 minutes, silently. Then I'll take a couple of questions. Then we'll continue on doing that with walking. I'll give you a couple of instructions around the walking. Okay? So if you want to just move and stretch out your legs or something for a second, and we'll sit quietly for 20 minutes.